Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Ballot question two, the question over legalizing physician-assisted suicide, has divided political, religious, and ethical opinions across the state. But what about the doctors who may be asked to write prescriptions that hasten the end of life? For them, question two challenges the very philosophical foundations of medical practice, perhaps nowhere more than in medical schools where future doctors are being trained today. Joining us with more is Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Hi there, Carrie.
Hi, Meghna.
So what drew you to this particular aspect of the question of physician-assisted suicide?
So as I was watching the discussion develop around this ballot question, I noticed that a lot of the coverage tended to be fairly polemical. It was one side arguing its case and the other side arguing its case. And what I was hearing from people in the medical trenches was that this was actually a very difficult issue for them, and that many people were divided around it. And in fact, medical associations were divided around it. The Massachusetts Medical Society and the American Medical Association are against physician-assisted suicide, but the American Medical Student Association is for it.
Well, let me jump in here for a second, because, I mean, the AMA and the Mass Medical Society are the heavyweights when it comes to practicing physicians.
Yes, indeed.
And the distinguishing feature for the other organization that you're talking about is it's students, so a younger generation of doctors.
Right. Well, it would seem that way. What we can certainly say is that there has been a trend over time. I spoke to Dan Brock, who was for a long time the head of ethics at Harvard Medical School, and he said that you could certainly say that over the last several decades, the trend has definitely been towards more patient autonomy, patient control, and that's the kind of medicine that's being taught now in medical schools.
Interesting. So there's a trend overall in medicine, but it's most maybe palpably manifested in how young doctors today are being trained.
That's what you would expect.
Well, let's talk to one of those doctors. His name is Ravi Parikh, and he's a fourth-year student at Harvard Medical School. Welcome to Radio Boston, Ravi.
Thank you.
I'm just curious, amongst you and your fellow med students, is there, you know, a prevailing consensus on whether or not you support physician-assisted suicide?
I think the one agreement that we can all have is that there's no consensus. We remain conflicted not only between students but within ourselves about how to support this bill. You know, we come into medical school guided by the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. But as Carrie was saying, in medical school, we learn about patient autonomy as this central guidepost to how we approach patients. And then when we actually get in the hospital in third year, we can see patients. We see patients dying without control, alone, in pain. And so that throws a whole monkey wrench into what we previously thought about how we should practice.
I mean, where do you stand on the issue?
Well, you know, I can say that I remain sort of conflicted. I can just say that a lot of medical students value patient autonomy, but we're grappling with you know, this prevailing notion that we should treat our patients, and so it's very difficult.
And Meghna, actually, what struck me was that, you know, for those of us who are just lay people going to the polls, we can just sort of think about what we would want. But for the poor doctors and medical students, they're being told by both sides, this is the best care you can give your patient. And so it creates a terrible dilemma.
The one thing that I'm sure of, though, is that doctors' opinions are important. Treatment decisions are so much a collaborative practice that a doctor's opinion is very important. And so even though doctors make up a minority of all Massachusetts residents, they're a very important minority because it's there. Even if this law is passed, if doctors are opposed to it, then you might not see it be implemented so well.
Can you take me a little bit more into how this question of patient autonomy and really patient-focused care is being taught on a day-to-day basis to you and your fellow med students at Harvard? Because I'm thinking, for example, doctors do end lives in this day and age when a patient's on a respirator and at the end of their life, for example, somebody turns that machine off at mm-hmm. times and it's a doctor. So that is, in an extreme interpretation, that is ending a life, taking a life, that you could say is, you know, not in alignment with the Hippocratic Oath, and yet it happens. So, I mean, that's a challenge already that doctors have to face every day. So how is it that it's talked about, you know, in your courses?
You know, it's talked about very much into practical matters. I think we have to realize that these patients that we would be discussing about are even a minority amongst all dying patients, patients that might want physician-assisted suicide. How it's framed to us in medical school is on a very day-to-day basis. How can patients take their medications? Are they able to be compliant? Do they have family members that can support them through this? This is all aspects of patient-centered care that we're starting to learn about now, but that have kind of not been a key element of medical training in generations beforehand.
Now, Ravi, I know you don't necessarily want to give us specifics, but I'm going to press you a little bit anyway.
Sure.
Because you and your fellow med students are the future of medicine. And regarding patient-centered care, how far do you think that should go? How much autonomy do you think your patients should have?
So that's a very difficult question. You know, having not much clinical experience on my realm, I'm not too sure of how far patient autonomy should go. But I know that in the vast majority of how I deal with patients, patient autonomy, what the patient desires, how the patient wishes to be in control of their illness, and its consequences is going to be the foremost concern in my mind.
Now, if you were to ever end up being asked to write one of these prescriptions, what questions will you ask yourself?
I think the question that I'll have to ask myself is what more could I do for the patient? And I think that that's something that whether you're for or against the bill is going to be central. There's a whole system of checks in my mind that even if, because patients are asking about this now, even a lot of patients with terminal illnesses ask for means to hasten the process of dying. It's not legal now, but doctors still have to deal with that.
Carrie, this is totally fascinating to me because we're talking to, you know, a young med student who may have to deal with these issues. But another reason why how Massachusetts may end up voting on question two is of interest to the nation is because Massachusetts is such a leader in medicine. I mean, I've been hearing that there are many people in other states who say if Massachusetts ends up, you know, saying yes to question two, that might open the doors to still more states.
Right, right. Now, we weren't the pioneers here. Of course, Oregon and Washington already have these laws. But what's interesting in the fight over this ballot measure is that you can see national money pouring in. You can see how we have become the nexus for the national camps on this question. And it does seem to be very pivotal. It does seem like how we go could very much affect the way this argument goes in the future. And by the way, the polls are looking like the public favor the measure. It's looking like it will pass.
Well, we officially have 2 weeks from today, so
time to start thinking about it. Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. Ravi Parikh, you're a fourth-year medical student and co-founder of the Palliative Care Interest Group at Harvard Medical School. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Thanks, as always.
You're welcome.
And listeners, as always, you can find Carrie's original post on this topic at commonhealth.wbur.org.
And that's our show for today. Tomorrow, youth sports and safety. After 5 Pop Warner football players suffered concussions in one game, parents wonder how this was allowed to happen.
Also, how running helped one man escape years of drug and alcohol abuse.
I'd run on this dirt road outside of town in that darkness at, you know, 5-6 miles an hour. The real work of sobriety actually began.
That's all tomorrow. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.